It's Food Friday, and as you know, we usually talk about making delicious and healthy food. In order to make the delicious food, though, you have to have the right gear. Paul Bunyan had his axe, Betsy Ross had her needles and thread, Julia Child had her kitchen walls covered in pegboard to hang her large arsenal of cooking utensils. You can join the conversation. What is your most essential kitchen tool? Or is there a kitchen gadget that you bought and regretted and it's gathering dust somewhere? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Stuart Faramond joins us now. He's a food scientist and the author of The Science of Cooking, Every Question Answered to Perfect Your Cooking. He's here to give us the scoop on what cooking tools are essential to have in the kitchen. Dr. Stu, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Great to chat again.
Well, let's get into this. We've talked to you about cooking with meat, some baking in the past. Now we're going to work on the hardware. And I'll say, I don't need to buy pots and pans right now, but when I have bought them in the past, I'm overwhelmed with the different options and selections out there. Can you start to sort out the world of pots and pans for us?
There are a lot on there. It's like any kind of going to a supermarket or something. There's so many different varieties. What on earth do you go for? What kind of pans have you got at home?
Oh, I've got a mishmash. I've got some cast iron skillets, which I like for many things. I've got, you know, some kind of nonstick. I think we have one of those cephalon, whatever they're called. See, I don't even know. I've got the stuff I've been cooking with for years.
Yeah, and you often get stuff given to you as wedding presents and all that stuff. I would keep it nice and simple. I think cast iron is great. It's really trendy. And that's a fantastic metal for retaining heat. I don't know what you use it for, but when you're cooking with it, you probably notice that when it's up to temperature, which can take an age, it holds on to the heat really well. So you can take it off the heat and it'll still carry on cooking the steak or whatever it is that's on there. And all your other pans, they come in different flavors and varieties, different variations on, most of the time, it's stainless steel. And stainless steel is a fairly cheap metal, but the problem is that it conducts heat quite poorly, but it's really easy to clean. So what you will find that's very popular now is called tri-ply, triple layered, essentially, pans that have the stainless steel on the top and the bottom, so it's kind of easy to clean. In the middle, you've got a really well-conducting metal, like aluminium or copper in the middle. They're quite expensive, but that gives you the best of both worlds. So you've got the easy cleaning, non-corrosible surface, but then you've got the advantage of these metals like copper, which copper's incredibly expensive. I think you could probably buy a set for about $1,000 or, you know, even more than that. And there's a lot of snobbery around kind of the pans and the metals that you use. But tri-ply, that's a really good compromise rather than just sort of spending a fortune on copper pans, which are very good, but they're really heavy. So they're not going to be good for kind of sauteing and tossing a meat around in a pan. So get the advantage of the copper by going for one of those layered pans.
Is that the tri-ply going to help distribute the heat better? Because I know sometimes if I'm making, say, pancakes, the pancake on the upper left corner is done. The other one is raw in the lower right. I have to, you know, I turn the pan around. I can predict it now. But will better pans distribute the heat more evenly?
Yeah, hotspots, they're a bit of a pain, aren't they? Yes. And actually, more important than the metal is the thickness. Now, the people that sell you expensive pans don't tell you this. They just tell you it's a copper pan, and we all know copper transfers heat really well and will spread the heat out nicely. But aluminium, for example, that's a really cheap metal and it lets heat go through it really quickly, and if you've got a thin aluminium pan, you will get these hot spots forming. But if you've got thick aluminium, it's just as good as thin copper. So it's the thickness of the metal that is really important for spreading that heat out, because you're giving the maximum distance between your burner and the food, which is resting inside. So the thicker, the better. So when you're shopping around for pans, look for the thickness of the base rather than the one that's all singing, all dancing, and it's got this expensive metal.
Once in a great while, Dr. Stu, I'll run across a recipe that says use a non-reactive pan. I don't remember what kind of recipe is that for. What's that about? Are there some materials that will ruin a recipe?
I think probably what they're saying is they're probably saying stainless steel, because that will withstand most things. Occasionally you can get pitting from lots of salt in the base without any kind of oil or any of the liquid in the bottom. But essentially stainless steel is very non-reactive, whereas aluminium, if you use acidic ingredients in aluminium, then it will stain, and also some of the aluminium comes off, and so it gives it a kind of a metallic tang. Although you can get anodized aluminium, which has been treated so that is essentially resistant like stainless steel. So anodized aluminium, stainless steel, copper. Most copper nowadays has a coating on the inside so that the copper doesn't come off. So providing you've got a glazed copper pan, an anodized aluminium pan, or a stainless steel pan, they are your non-reactive pans.
Talking to Dr. Stuart Faramond, author of The Science of Cooking, Every Question Answered to Perfect Your Cooking. We're talking about the gear, the gadgets in the kitchen. Dr. Stu, let's turn to knives. Those get a lot of attention, I think. There are different options out there for the, you know, casual home cook. What's a good, reliable knife for them and for me?
First of all, don't bother with the sets. They make for nice gifts, but If you've got a set of knives, there's probably about two of them that you use, and the rest of them just sit there and look pretty. Have you got a set of knives?
I do. Speaking of wedding gifts, so these knives are pretty old at this point and probably in need of sharpening. But yeah, and you're right. I use the big one. I use the little ones. Bread knife when I need a bread knife. And there's a couple that are like, if everything else is dirty, I pull it out.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, and that's all I recommend is you get a big one. You get a chef's knife, and knives are right to put some time and some money into, because if you're doing cooking, you're doing a lot of chopping. It's probably perhaps the main thing that you're doing in a kitchen when you're not in front of the burner is doing the chopping. So a chef's knife is crucial, and that's the kind of your fairly large size knife. It's got normally got a cut, and so you can do that kind of that rocking motion with your herbs and stuff. That's your kind of your mainstay, and you can use the broad side for kind of cracking garlic cloves and things like that on it. So your chef's knife, that's the one that you want. You want a small knife for kind of getting in the nooks and the crannies, a paring knife. They're often called the real small ones. And I would say a serrated knife as well for cutting your bread. Serrated knives last a really long time. Compared to your other kinds of knives. So they would be the ones I would recommend. You could also get a long slicing knife, which is good for doing nice thin slices of meat. They're the ones that you want to go for. And when you're looking for knives, I think it's a false economy if you say, I'm just going for a cheap one because it doesn't matter too much. Because you kind of get what you pay for, I think, with knives. And because you're using it so much, so things to look out for when you're getting a knife, ideally go for a knife that is forged. And, you know, we've all seen those images of the blacksmiths and the anvil, and they're banging away the metal to sort of forge a knife or something, or a blade. Well, forged knives that you get today are kind of, they're made in a similar way. So the metal has been heated and cooled and banged to make the metal really, really hard and hard wearing. Whereas a lot of cheaper knives, they're called stamped knives, which just means that the metal's come off a sheet and it's been sort of stamped out with a stencil that looks the shape of a knife, and then one side's been sharpened, and then they stick a handle on it, and there's your knife. They're not as good. They don't keep their edge as well, and they're more likely to fall apart, basically. So for looking for a forged knife, when you're looking at it, you'll see that the very tip, if you're looking down on the knife, the very tip is narrower than at the handle end. And you'll see at the handle end, it flays out towards the handle. And that shows you that it's come from, that all that curvature has come from one piece of metal rather than just a sheet that's been sandwiched between two halves of a handle. So always look for a forged knife. And there's a lot of snobbery around. Do you go for a carbon steel knife, or do you go for a stainless steel knife? In the days of yore, stainless steel was terrible, and it would lose its sharpness really quickly, and chefs would only go for carbon steel. The difference between carbon steel and stainless steel is essentially steel, but it's got an added element in called chromium that stops it reacting. But those extra bits of chromium in there can make it softer, not make it as good a cutting edge. But modern stainless steel is a lot better and is pretty much, if you get decent stainless steel, comparable with carbon steel. So I would say look at some online reviews of knives. If you're an everyday kind of cook like me, go for a stainless steel knife and look for one that's forged rather than stamped. And that's the best advice for most knives. You can go for ceramic. They're super, super sharp, but frighteningly difficult to sharpen. If you drop it on the floor, they'll break.
Talking to Dr. Stuart Faramon, food scientist and author of The Science of Cooking, Every Question Answered to Perfect Your Cooking. We're getting his advice on the tools of the trade, what we need in our kitchen, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What tools do you think every kitchen should have? Is there a particular favorite knife or other kitchen gadget, piece of gear that you use all the time? It's your go-to, whether it's new and fancy or something that's been handed down through the generations. Or did you plunk down for a kitchen gadget that you used once 10 years ago? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about essential tools for the kitchen with Dr. Stuart Faramond. He's a food scientist and author of The Science of Cooking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite kitchen tool or your least favorite? 800-642-1234 or post in the Ideas Network Facebook page. Want to turn now for a moment before we go to our callers to the wonderful world of spatulas.
There's just one place to go for all your spatula needs.
Spatula City!
Spatula City! A giant warehouse of spatulas for every occasion. Thousands to choose from in every shape, size, and color. And because we eliminate the middleman, we can sell all our spatulas factory direct to you. Where do you go when you want to buy name brand spatulas at a fraction of retail cost? Spatula City! 7 locations. We're in the yellow pages under spatulas.
From Weird Al's UHF, Dr. Stu, give us some spatula pointers. Dr. Stu, are you there? It looks like we lost our connection with our guest. Fun to hear about Spatula City. Let's go to your calls now. Want to hear your favorite bit of kitchen gear. We'll go to Aaron with us in Kenosha. Aaron, hi.
Hi,
Aaron. What is your favorite kitchen gadget?
So my favorite kitchen gadget, it sounds a little obscure, but I picked up a $4.99 pineapple core and slicer. And if you've ever cut a pineapple before, it's
a pain.
Annoying. It's such a pain. And the pineapple core and slicer, you literally just cut the top of the pineapple off and you just screw the thing down. Super easy. You can have an entire pineapple sliced and cored in about 30 seconds.
And to be worth that $5, Aaron, you probably eat a fair amount of pineapple, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, it's one of those things that, you know, it's just, it's definitely worth it to purchase, so.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Aaron. Dr. Stu, I heard a telltale noise. Are you back?
I'm here.
I'm sorry. We lost you there. Is there, Dr. Stu, a gadget that you, as a cook yourself, as well as food scientist, bought and regretted?
Well, first say the bread maker. It was fun for 2 or 3 months, and then it became a bit of a chore. My wife and I have now gone back to making bread the old-fashioned way, and it's much more fun. So the bread maker, yes, but a pasta maker doesn't get much use, but most things tend to get given away if they don't get used. And I probably don't have enough pineapple to pour a pineapple.
Yeah, so I used to do a lot of canning of tomatoes, and I got a tomato shark, which is like a melon baller with serrated edges, like teeth, and it's great for popping that top out of the tomato. It was cheap, but now I don't can anymore, and yeah, my tomato shark needs are few and far between. Let's go back to our callers. We've got Mark with us in Bowler. Mark, hi.
Yes, I was in Alaska last year, and I bought a knife called Ulu, U-L-U. It's an Eskimo design knife, and I find it so functional and easy to use, and they're extremely sharp. Holds an edge, and it's my go-to knife almost for everything now.
Great. Thanks a lot for that call, Mark. And Dr. Stu, I think chefs do feel that attachment with their knives. When they find a good one, they're going to stick with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just had a look at Ulu knives because I've not seen them before. They're like a rocking knife. for doing your kind of your small leaves and your herbs and all those sorts of things. They look good. If you do all that stuff, then go for it.
We also heard on Facebook from Deborah. She says her must-have tool is her incredibly sharp 8-inch chef's knife. Mary Ann needs her Warthog brand knife sharpener. Talk about sharpening a little. That's something I don't do enough, Dr. Stu.
Yes, or do you? I mean, have you got one of those honing steels? Well, they're sometimes called sharpening rods.
Yeah, it was part of the kit. My wife used it once but didn't tell me, so I did nick myself, not expecting my knife to be so sharp.
Yeah, they don't actually sharpen.
They don't.
What they do is they hone a knife. So if you can imagine the sharp cutting edge of the knife, if you were to zoom in really, really, really close, it would be like going to a smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller to a tiny little point. And that's your cutting edge. And obviously the smaller that is, the sharper it will be, the more pressure it's going to be putting on the food when you slice it. Now, over time, that really narrow, sharp edge bends over. And it loses its sharpness because you wouldn't have thought that metal will bend, but it does because it's so small, it bends over. And at that point, it feels blunt when you're trying to cut with it and you're having, you know what it's like when you've got the tomato and your knife doesn't work with the tomato anymore and you've got to get your bread knife out to slice it to get the nice thin slices. And to sort that out, you need to get your honing steel or what's sometimes called sharpening rod. And you need to scrape it down the side. Oh. Essentially, there's videos on YouTube. You can see how to do it. And the professional chefs, they look the Don when they do it. And that essentially brings that back into line. So it gets rid of that curvature that's happened on the end of the blade. So it lines it back up again. And so it feels like a sharp knife again. It doesn't actually sharpen it because to sharpen it, you've got to wear away the metal and to make a whole new. So a steel doesn't do that. It just sort of aligns it again to make cutting easier. You can do that so many times. And generally, if you speak to a butcher or somebody who uses knives all the time, they will say that they do that in between each, pretty much in between every job or every other job they do. They'll hone it. And then every once in a while, they'll sharpen it, which means putting it through a machine or ideally use a whetstone because the machines aren't brilliant and they take away quite a lot of metal. And then that forms a whole fresh new edge and you get a new fresh point again.
Let's go back.
So you could hone for a bit, but you won't cure a truly blunt knife.
Let's go back to our callers. Desmond is with us in Waiawiga. Desmond, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
All right, well, first of all, I really appreciate my local NPR station, and I listen every single day.
Thanks.
Just because there's always something new and something I find interesting. Anyhow, the topic of the day, different kitchen utensils and whatnot and devices. I have a knife that my parents had won while they were still together. And going through the divorce, it was something that neither one of them wanted to let go of. Anyhow, my mother ended up finding one, and I couldn't believe she found one because I thought it was an older knife. It is a brand called Geneva Crucible, and it's Geneva Crucible Forge, made in USA, and, I mean, vegetables, meat, bread, this knife is such a great knife. I don't know if you're familiar with the Geneva Crucible.
I'm not. Desmond, thanks.
No, I'm not.
But it's a forge. I assume it's one of those forged knives you were talking about, Dr. Stu, and apparently good enough to be a contentious item in a divorce proceeding.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the images of it. Yeah, it looks like a good old traditional. Is it a chef's knife that you're using?
Well, it is. I want to say it's semi-serrated. It's serrated and it's got a couple of notches throughout the band of the knife. And I looked them up online, and you can get them for about $25-$30. But it is such a good knife.
All right. Thanks, Desmond, for the call. I want to get into one more item. Cutting boards. I've got a couple wood ones that we've had forever, a ceramic one. I know there are plastic ones out there. What do you go to?
Wooden every time. Yep. There was a big thing a few years back where wooden was out because it was unhygienic, and kitchens everywhere used plastic. But the science that was based on wasn't really watertight, and we now know that wood is actually quite good and in many ways superior to plastic. I'd steer clear of the marble ones and the stone ones and the really hard ones because they blunt your knife, and they're also really cold. The metal ones, they'll transfer the heat away from whatever it is you're cooking, you're putting on your board, which isn't great if you're doing lots of baking. But wood is good. It's actually got substances in it that are antibacterial, so they will help fight off germs. Whereas plastic, they're easy to wash, and you can get different colours, which is great when you're working in a professional kitchen, because you can have one colour for raw meats, one for vegetables, and all the rest of it, and you can keep track of your boards very nicely. But when you've started to cut into plastic, and you know that your plastic boards, they pick up those scratches all along them when you've had them for about 6 months, and in those little scratches, bugs can build up in there, and they form what's called a biofilm, and they kind of nestle in there, and so they need really careful heating on a really high temperature to make sure that your chopping board stays really hygienic. Whereas with wood, it doesn't seem to be such a problem because it's from a plant. It's got these natural substances in it to fight off those bugs. So wood, good trustworthy wood is good. The cheaper wood.
I'm going to jump in. We're just about out of time. Thanks to Dr. Stuart Faramond, author of The Science of Cooking, Every Question Answered to Perfect Your Cooking. We've been talking about his must-have tools for a well-functioning kitchen. You can still share your favorite kitchen piece of gear over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.